This is a discussion of truth coming your way remotely. Merry Christmas. The date, December 22nd. Excuse me, 26th. My name is Ian Hamilton-Strachey. I am the host of Discussion of Truth. Coming at you every Wednesday at 5 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
We created and occupied a position of outrageousness that kind of masked everything that was happening behind the scenes.
By now, you've either seen or heard of Lifetime surviving R. Kelly's six-part docuseries. It's hard to stomach.
Yeah, it was really hard for me to watch this one. And from what is being called a sex cult to all the signs that pointed to R. Kelly's sexual misconduct, E.T. is here to break down the top most shocking confessions from alleged victims,
the biggest red flags, and the mute R. Kelly movement sparked after years of outrageous behavior with underage girls.
We're going to stop it right there because that is a prelude to the show coming your way today. What those two cases show, talking about R. Kelly cases against him regarding the alleged sex occult or cult, abuse occult that he's accused of having for over 20 years. What those two cases show is that it takes networks of people to enable this type of behavior, a la Jeffrey Epstein, oh, and so many more. Author of Solace, the case against R. Kelly, Jim DeRogatis, will be joining the program today. The former Chicago Sun-Times reporter spent decades investigating the singer's troubled history with women, quote, everybody from the driver to the personal assistant to the person who books the airplane ticket and makes the travel arrangements to the person who pays off the girls to be quiet. And the fact that Acosta's career is coming down in flames, he's part of the justice system that turned a blind eye. Now, in regards to the discussion that's coming your way momentarily, what a show this is going to be. One, Kelly Rogers has been in contact with me, and she is the mother of former, quote, R. Kelly girlfriend, Faith Rogers. She was invited to the program, but she did not respond to the invitation for her. So, coming at you in about a 10 minutes time, about 5:15 Eastern Standard, we'll be receiving Jim DeRogatis onto the program to mention a few of, well, what's on tap here for the program. Again, Discussion of Truth airs 5 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard every Wednesday. Okay, this is a Thursday edition, a special Thursday edition, of course, because we took a day of remembrance, if you will, and celebration, as is common throughout the Western world, in what is known as the Christmas holiday. Coming your way to start off the new year. So that will be next week. We'll be joined from England by Tobias Churchton. Years before Dan Brown's research came to light in form of the Da Vinci Code, Tobias, Oxford-educated and British scholar, had long gained notoriety for his work within the Gnostic spiritual realm. His 1987 four-part drama documentary for Channel 4, that's a UK television production, Gnostics, won a New York Times Festival Gold Award. And former Dutch theologian said about Tobias' work for Channel 4 that it would change the minds of millions. Giles Kiesbel, if I've pronounced that correctly. As of 2005, so 15 years now, Tobias has lectured at Exeter University, where he's an honorary fellow and faculty member. He holds an MA in theology from Brasenose College at Oxford. Born to an ancient Cheshire family in Sutton Coldfield, UK, Churchton is considered Britain's leading scholar of Western esotericism. A filmmaker, a poet, and composer, and author, he is known for acclaimed biographies on William Blake, Aleister Crowley, Elias Ashmole, and G.I. Gerd. Jiff. Having authored over 20 books, Churchton's current publication, Aleister Crowley in India, goes into the travels of Aleister Crowley in India through this mystical ancient land. By the way, it's my understanding, we confirm this at a later point, but I understand that Aleister Crowley was actually banned from Paris. It may have been banned from France altogether, not sure, but I know that, I have heard that Aleister Crowley was banned from his work in Paris. Who is this mystical creature, Aleister Crowley, that is so often studied, if you will, by musicians and other artists? Tobias Church will be joining us next week. That's what we'll be getting kicking off 2020. And by the way, 2020 will mark the third year of the program we know as Discussion to Truth. This will mark the third year for the program, Wynnewood Radio. Proceeding into the new year, January 8th, will be receiving former U.S. presidential candidate among the Democratic Party, Lester Lawrence Lessig III. He's an attorney, Harvard lecturer, and political activist. He holds the Roy L. Furman Professor of Law and Leadership at Harvard. He's a former director of Edmund J. Safra Center for Ethics at Harvard. And he's a supporter of net neutrality as he founded the Center for Internet and Society at Stanford University. He's also a former lecturer at University of Chicago. The New Yorker said this about Lawrence. He's the most important thinker on intellectual property in the internet era. We know the internet has changed and is changing the way we conduct ourselves in society. I believe one of the initial systems for the internet or communications thereof was from UCLA to Stanford. Of course, it was for many, many years, if not decades prior to that, a public domain transmission. It was a military form of communication within the military. And my understanding is that the Queen of England is the first to have received electronic mail as we know it. Okay. Lawrence will be discussing a few of his books and topics: Republic Lost, America Compromised, and They Don't Represent Us. And what does he mean by that? Furthering in our journey into January, we'll be joined by Servando Gonzalez. This will be an incredible discussion. All these guests, of course, are most incredible, highly educated, well-written, well-versed, well-researched. Servando Gonzalez is a Cuban-born American historian and author. He studied and received his training as historian at the University of Havana in Cuba. This is what's really interesting about Servando. His publications and books, essays, and articles vary from topics regarding Latin America, global intelligence communities, state and country espionage, and semiotics. Servando's works include Treason in America, the Council on Foreign Relations and Partners in Treason, the CFR, CIA, and the Castro Connection. Something I think is not often looked at. Is there a connection between the CFR? Or have you even heard of the CFR? What do you know about the CFR? What is the CFR? Okay, it's on the east side there of Central Park in New York. Council on Foreign Relations. How is it connected to the CIA? And one of the other interesting connections that I often talk about because of Charlotte Iserbit and Anthony Sutton. Charlotte's a former guest on the program. The CFR, or the CIA rather, is closely connected, of course, to the Skull and Bone Society, the secret society there at Yale University. And is it connected to the CFR? Or you betcha. Very closely connected to that institution. Okay, so Servando spent a lot of time looking into that. He's written a number of books. He's written on this topic of New World Order, which is found right on your U.S. dollar bill, Novus Ordo Seclorum. What is the New World Order? Where does it stem from? And who controls the reins of it? Does it link into the Bilderberg Group? Of course it does. Okay, and many people talk about the Bohemian Grove. And these are very wealthy societies and meeting and organizations and groups to exchange ideas and whatnot. And regard, well, look, the bottom line, everybody wants peace. We all want peace, don't we? Of course, we all want peace, want to hug our family at the end of the day, that's what we all strive for. And so what is the main objective of the New World Order, and what is it theory or is it practice, right? So Cervando goes into that, and this is what he says. He takes it to another level, being a Cuban-born fellow, and of course born into Cuba prior to the Castro regime, I'm pretty sure. Quote, far from being a failure, he says, Castro's Cuba is a successful social experiment, a testing ground for the New World Order. The people who planned the experiment have already began to implement it here in America, says Servando Gonzalez. Political correctness was tested in Cuba before its implementation in the United States. And we know that being politically correct and this type of censorship on free speech has been an attack, if you will, on your freedoms in the United States for going on, probably, I'd say 20 years. Okay, we're going to end July with Josh Reeves, the Dallas-based radio host and filmmaker. He's going to talk about his most current film, The Spellcasters. And then looking down into March, for instance, we will be receiving William Alva Blunden, The Rootkit Arsenal is one of his books. And he also goes into Behold, the title of his book, Behold, A Pale Force, Cyberware Threat, Infiltration, and Malwell Industrial Complex. That'll be Bill Blunden joining the program down the road in 2020 into March. So on slate, quite a few really wonderful guests. That includes receiving Tom Hartman back onto the program. Tom Hartman, rated by Progressive Magazine, the number one talk show host by Progressive Magazine in the U.S. He airs his show Monday through Friday. I think he's got a 3-hour slot, and he writes out of his home in New England. Tom Hartman will be rejoining the program for a second time, coming up here in 2020. So I thank you for listening to A Discussion of Truth. I thank you for supporting the podcast. And I also want to mention Trine Day. Trine Day publisher will be picking up, or has picked up, and we reached an agreement, and will be publishing Freedom Reserve, No More Lies, which is my book that will be coming out again in the spring catalog of 2020. You can buy it right now. You can order it pre-sale via Amazon. You can also order it via Indigo Books, based out of Canada. Those are the two houses that are offering pre-sales of the book. Again, coming out, slated to come out in April of 2020. Again, Freedom Reserved, No More Lies. That is my current book that will be hitting shelves and the market in a few months. If you like what you hear here and the topics resonate with you, please go to bit.ly, that's bit.ly/CapitalZika, that's capital Z-I-K-A, Miami Beach, capital M and B. You type that into your web browser, and that gives you a solid basis of understanding why exactly I hit the airwaves once a week to bring to you A Discussion of Truth, because I was exposed to that very controversial pesticide in Miami, where Wynwood got hit with this and Miami Beach got hit with it. And from there, I came on this trail that is just opening so many different doors and really helping me try to help you to dig and research and find what's really happening in what you call, what is known, Trump uses the term all the time, the deep state. So what is that? Okay, and what is the concept of a new world order? And how can we, as average people, how can we step up and make the place better and make the world we live in a better place? Because again, like I said, that's the objective. That's what we all strive for at the end of the day. All right, so waiting standby for us is Jim DeRogatis. Who is Jim DeRogatis? Again, Jim is a former journalist for the Chicago Sun-Times And we will be Skyping him in just a second here. Just a second. We'll be bringing Jim onto the program. And here we go.
Hello, Ian.
Jim DeRogatis. How are you, Jim? Happy Merry Christmas to you, sir.
Yeah, thank you.
Jim, thank you for joining Windward Radio and Discussion of Truth. For listeners to understand, as I mentioned, you are a former reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times, and you have written for Rolling Stone, Spin Magazine, Guitar World. You currently have a show based there in Chicago with WBEZ Sound Opinions. That is a short and concise introduction to you, Jim. Take a moment and introduce yourself outside of that for listeners to understand who you are. Again, Jim is joining the program to talk about Solas, the case against R. Kelly.
Well, you know, Ian, I'm primarily a music critic. Have been through all those years at the Sun-Times, 15 years. Sound Opinions airs on 125 public radio stations in the U.S., and I've written 11 books about music. And then there's this new book, Solas, The Case Against R. Kelly, which is a different sort of book. I mean, I started out as a beat and investigative reporter in New Jersey. At the start of my career, writing about music for free for fanzines. And sometimes you choose your stories when you're a journalist, and sometimes your stories choose you. And this Kelly story started for me in November 2000, and it really hasn't ever stopped. We published the first piece in the Sun-Times December 21, 2000, so 19 years ago, about what we called his habit of you know, preying on underage girls for sex. And you know, now he faces 42 felony counts in 2 federal and 2 state trials, 195 years in prison if he's convicted on all accounts. Nobody in the history of popular music, Ian, has ever faced charges this far-ranging, this numerous, this dramatic, for preying on women. And let's face it, you know, in this art form I love, popular music, rock and roll, R&B, whatever you want to call it, men have been treating women badly for a very long time, but nobody has racked up charges like Kelly.
Yeah, that's very exhausting to listen to. I open my show by letting listeners know that I have been in communication with the mother of Faith Rogers, who actually reached out to me. I'm not sure if you're familiar with
sure, I know Mrs. Rogers. Yeah,
they denied requests and didn't respond, but I did invite them to not to overlap your time on the program, but to give her side and her experience with R. Kelly. So this is, again, it's really exhausting to hear that type of thing, because R. Kelly is so beloved in so many people's hearts, and that's kind of the magic, if you will, of music, is that it really resonates within our soul and makes us happy. And then to hear something like this on the flip side, of course, and you've been tracking this for 22 decades, but to hear the flip side of this and how someone that is loved by so many can very possibly commit a very atrocious crime multiple times over the span of 2 decades, then it's kind of like a shocker. It's like, well, wait a second, this is you know, it's kind of like, oh wait, I was waiting for Santa Claus and then I see my, you know, my father. Excuse me. This is very shocking. What I want to kind of ask, and I've had a chance to kind of very briefly go through the book, I wanted to ask you, Jim, if it's too far-fetched, have you found any link, because, you know, Jeffrey Epstein, that was an issue just a few months ago. Is there any overlapping? Is there any kind of association there? Any link that you found?
I think the similarities between the Jeffrey Epstein and Harvey Weinstein stories and R. Kelly's story is very wealthy, powerful, well-connected men are able to get away with things that the bus driver, the soccer coach, would not be able to get away with. And, you know, I think the similarities there are intense. But the difference, Ian, is that, you know, when Gwyneth Paltrow and Mira Sorvino and the beautiful actresses, superstars, that Weinstein preyed on, and with Epstein, you know, palling around with Prince Andrew and Alan Dershowitz and Donald Trump and Bill Clinton, you know, they were a little quicker to be believed, those women, when they began to speak out. Whereas the thing that I have heard from dozens and dozens thousand is nobody matters less in American society than young black girls. That's one thing. You know, we were not going to believe these victims. And number two, I think that what you were saying earlier, the power of music. You know, Michael Jackson has had, whether we believe them or not, four young men credibly accuse him. He was tried by Santa Barbara. Charges were just added 3 weeks ago. You know, it's just extraordinary. And I understand the power of music. If, you know, believe me, I mean, it's my life, you know. If Step in the Name of Love was your wedding song, if I Believe I Can Fly played at your kid's kindergarten graduation, if Ignition Remix was at every backyard barbecue you've ever been to, those songs are now yours as much as they are his. But I think what activists like the two women in Atlanta who started Mute R. Kelly, they've been accused of being censors, of cancel culture. I don't think that's what they're saying. What they're saying is be a wise consumer. If you can still listen to and enjoy this music, there's no right or wrong in art. But know the context and know the damage he has caused in the black community, and know that your money is enabling him to continue that behavior. I mean, not anymore. The reason he's in jail without bond, and I don't believe he'll ever be free again, is because he's really run out of money. He doesn't have the power and the wealth to fight these charges the way he did when even a half-hour video of him having sex with a 14-year-old girl surfaced in 2002. He was able to buy his way and delay that trial, buy his way out of justice.
Yeah, so you've been on this since for two decades almost, 19 years. And I found something in talk.com, via the Talko, the TALKO.com, and they've got something back on him in 1991 that he was having relations with a then 15-year-old promising woman, a singer. This woman is Tia Hawking. Are you familiar with that?
She was the first girl to try to stop him with a civil lawsuit after the state's attorney in Illinois denied criminal charges, had no interest in pursuing her criminal claim. She filed her lawsuit in 1996 on Christmas Eve, and we were the first to report it on December 21, 2000. And Tiffany Hawkins really started the ball rolling. Kelly would go back to his high school choir class and pick up 15-year-old sophomores. And Tiffany was one of them. There were five others, five of her friends, all 15 years old. And Tia was best friends with Aaliyah, who was 15, when Kelly illegally married her in 1996. And Tiffany got to tour the world from the south side of Chicago with a voice like Whitney Houston's. She sang backing vocals with Aaliyah in Paris, Amsterdam, Rome, London. And Kelly rewarded her by, sexual contact with her at 15 and five of her friends and her best friend Aaliyah. You know, there are literally dozens and dozens, 48 women whose names I know, lives have been ruined to one degree or another. When I say ruined, it sounds hyperbolic, but Tiffany tried to commit suicide after that illegal sexual contact with Kelly.
Yeah, that's what stuck out with me as well. And then also, you know, R. Kelly's a guy that's won over 100 awards in his time and three Grammys. But he also was, you brought up Michael Jackson. He was also linked to Michael Jackson in that he wrote at least one of Michael Jackson's songs and hits.
Yeah, he wrote Jackson's first number one hit after Jackson was accused of sex with underage boys. You Were Not Alone. It was Jackson's first number one hit after the scandal and the last of his career. And Kelly had originally written it about what he was going through after being separated from his 15-year-old bride, Aaliyah. And, you know, Jackson was going through something similar. I mean, you know, what do these two musical superstars, you know, Kelly has sold 100 million records in his career. What do they talk about in the recording studio when they both came from exceedingly tragic and troubled and seemingly abusive childhoods and then became abusers themselves? It's just one of the saddest stories in the history of music.
So, Jim, is there, assuming Michael Jackson, although never formally found guilty of it, assuming that indeed he was at this Neverland Ranch and outside of Santa Barbara, and assuming that he was having sexual relations with underage boys, is there, and then this R. Kelly link with the underage women or girls, not hardly women, is there maybe something underlying here within the musical community? Not to pinpoint that the two of them are African American musicians, but is there maybe something underlying within the music world?
Well, I think that popular music has always given us an outlet for our raciest, raunchiest feelings. You know, I mean, Rolling Stones. The Beatles, you know, she was just 17, you know what I mean. A quote that haunts me came from Kelly's half-brother, Carrie, who I spoke to in the book, and he said, if you listen to his music, that MF-er was always talking about other sick blanks who were on the same wavelength as him. Uh-huh. And, you know, the vast majority of Kelly's catalog is, I will pursue my pleasures, my sexual pleasures, wherever I desire without regard to my partner. And then there's, you know, maybe a quarter of the material is Sunday morning, falling to his knees, Father, forgive me. I'm a horrible sinner. I don't know how you can forgive me. You know, he never enumerated what those sins are. But if we are to read 42 state and federal indictments, it's now crystal clear. Because the video, apparently, in 2008, he was acquitted, he was tried. The girl never testified, her mother never testified, her father never testified. She was 14. 14 witnesses did identify her and confirm that he had he had sexual contact with her when she was 14. But now we know, according to the federal indictment from New York, that the girl, the mother, the father were paid off to lie to the grand jury and not to testify. You know, Kelly successfully gamed the system better than anybody since O.J. Simpson, better than anybody you can name. But it's, you know, now the money has run out. You know, he cannot afford four $850 an hour attorneys as he had for 6.5 years.
Yeah. And that sounds, the other link here is that, you know, age ain't nothing but a number. This is a hit song that he'd written, I think he wrote for Aaliyah, is that correct?
Yeah, for Aaliyah. He titled that song, titled the album, produced her album when she was 15, a student at the Detroit High School of the Performing Arts, and then, you know, began sexual contact with her as he had with all of her backing singers and their friends. And, you know, it all of this happened in full view of the world, you know, and people just discounted it as a rumor. Well, you know, maybe she's 15, maybe she's 18. We don't know what really happened. His record company denied it. Her managers denied it. Everybody denied it. And he got away with it, and he continued to get away with it. You know, if victim number one was 1991, that's an extraordinary amount of time until he was finally thrown in jail, awaiting trial, awaiting four trials, you know, earlier this year. It saddens me as someone who loves music and believes in the power of music to change our lives, to think of it used as a tool of the predator to corrupt and ruin lives is, you know, because there's no denying Kelly's musical genius. To have that gift and to use it to pursue, you know, causing this kind of pain to so many women, and to have the record, you know, everybody from the tape operator and the gopher and the security guys around him to the heads of his record company, Jive Records, Barry Weiss and Clive Calder, everybody knew. And everybody in Chicago failed those young women, the court system, the civil attorneys, the journalism aside from the Sun-Times, the radio industry, the publicists, the record industry. You know, it's just horrifying. The churches, nobody cared about these young black girls.
Yeah, and you really need a community watchdog. And unfortunately, I think it's kind of like the mother that stays at home and gets beaten by her husband. She's afraid to call the police. She's afraid to come out and say something. What has been the response from black leaders like Reverend Jackson or Louis Farrakhan?
Jackson refused to talk to me for this book. His organization, Rainbow Push Coalition, would bus children in, grammar school children, 7th, 8th grade, to Kelly's court appearances in the mid-2000s with free R. Kelly t-shirts. He happened to be giving a lot of money to Jackson's right-hand man, the Reverend James Meeks, who was his spiritual advisor. You know, nobody spoke out. In Chicago, it's a very big, small town, you know. Mm-hmm. But in America in general, black superstars on the level of R. Kelly. It was a small community in Chicago with that kind of money and that kind of power. Michael Jordan, well, Jordan, you know, tapped Kelly to put I Believe I Can Fly in Space Jam, his movie where he played basketball with Bugs Bunny. Oprah had to know. Oprah had to know, and Oprah never spoke out. The Obamas never spoke out. But they're not the only ones. You know, nobody in the music industry spoke out. To be certain, Kelly is where he is today because so many black women had the courage to do the most difficult thing any woman can do, which is to rip out their soul and talk about their sexual abuse to a fat white rock critic. To go on the record and tell their story. Those women have stopped Kelly. And, you know, I think when America saw them early this year in January in Surviving R. Kelly, that six-hour docuseries on Lifetime that Dream Hampton, brilliant black woman, put together. You know, and there's going to be another 5 hours that begin airing January 2nd this year. I think that finally, you know, I was having these experiences for years, sitting with these women for hours and then telling their stories. And then suddenly woman after woman after woman is on camera. And, you know, they're not doing this to get famous. They were vilified, dismissed as gold diggers, liars. You know, still to this day, the amount of social media hatred that they're receiving, it's great courage that they have spoken out.
So, Jim, you've been covering this for 20 years, and you've been sounding the alarm for over that course of time. What was the first thing that kind of tipped you off to, hey, wait a second, here's this great singer that's selling a ton of albums, but he's doing something illegal. What tipped you off?
Well, you know, the Wednesday before Thanksgiving 2000, I had just reviewed on its release date Kelly's fifth album, TP2.com. And I got a fax at the Sun-Times that said, "Dear Mr. Goddess, you compared R. Kelly to Marvin Gaye. Well, Marvin Gaye had his problems. They were nothing like Robert's. Robert's problem is young girls." And I got to confess, Ian, I threw it in the slush pile. I thought this was a player hater somebody trying to down a successful black superstar. I got a lot of hate mail. Whenever I wrote about hip-hop, that's not music, it's noise, right? You know, Chicago's a city with a racial divide. But something bothered me over the holiday. There were a lot of specifics in that fax, more than a mere rumor monger would have had. And I went back to the office on Monday and I read it carefully. And it mentioned the Tiffany Hawkins lawsuit, the first lawsuit that tried to stop him. I mean, there have since been almost a dozen civil lawsuits. And these girls were going to the civil courts not to get rich, but because the cops, the feds, nobody was interested in pressing criminal charges. You know, until the videotape surfaced. And I got to confess, in 2002, February, when I got this 26-minute, 39-second video of Kelly having sex with a 14-year-old and urinating in her mouth, a horrifying document of a rape. It's a statutory rape. It became the P-tape because of that fetish, you know, Dave Chappelle and black comedians. But it was not. It was the rape tape. I thought he was done then. I thought he was done when our first story ran in 2000. I thought he was done when the videotape surfaced in 2002. He was acquitted in 2008. You know, why justice took this long for so many young black girls, it's just a travesty. And that's why I wrote the book, because it was a dark and horrible place to live, to finish the story of that book. You know, and much less to do that reporting for 19 years. But I think the book is necessary because above and beyond R. Kelly, we have to wonder how this was able to happen and what does it say that the music industry kind of applauded it. You know, because I mean, Lady Gaga was recording with him in 2013. Gaga, a champion of female empowerment, you know, records a single that he wrote, "Do What You Want With My Body." You know, I mean, people were drawn to Kelly, artists and listeners, in part because of the sexual sure. taboos that he was talking about.
Right, right. That makes sense. I mean, that totally makes sense. Jim, Chicago is famously known for mafia. We talk about Al Capone. In fact, Al Capone had a house right off Miami Beach in one of the islands. Have you found any ties to the Chicago mob?
You know, Kelly's lead defense attorney in the trial in 2008, it took 6 years after the tape surfaced in 2002 to go to trial in 2008. He was acquitted. Kelly's lead attorney was a famous self-professed, he used this term, mob lawyer, uh-huh. Ed Jensen. And only a couple of months ago, Eddie's on his deathbed, having defended innumerable mobsters, murderers, and R. Kelly. On his deathbed, he gave an interview to another reporter at the Sun-Times. Yeah, we all knew Kelly was guilty as hell. I was surprised he got off. You know, but Eddie was making $850 an hour for 6.5 years. And he was happy to take that money. He was happy to hold press conferences in his office with pictures of his grandchildren, who were white, on his desk, and to dismiss the damage Kelly had done to black kids that same age.
Yeah, yeah.
that's a mob connection. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Now you mentioned the Obamas.
The other mob
yeah.
connection.
Go ahead, Jim.
You know, the New York case, the federal case out of the Eastern District of New York in Brooklyn, is charging him not only with violating the Mann Act. Transporting minors across state lines for sexual purposes. That's what they got Chuck Berry on in the 50s. It's also a RICO case, federal racketeering. They are charging him under the same laws, operating a criminal enterprise to pursue these illegal sexual relationships the same way they go after mob families like the Genoveses or the Gambinos or the drug cartels. Yeah. Nobody in the history of music's ever been hit with a RICO case.
Yeah, this sounds really, really nasty. Does he stand any chance? It doesn't sound like he's got any chance to get out of this alive. Does he stand any chance?
I don't think there's any chance in hell that all 42 felony indictments will be dismissed.
Yeah.
Two states and in two federal cases. I think even at this, you know, he's 53. even a plea deal, you're talking a decade, 2 decades, 3 decades. I don't think he's going to breathe fresh air again.
And he doesn't have the money to support. It sounds like he's spent all the money he's made.
He did, with innumerable settlements with underage women in exchange for non-disclosure agreements. You asked about the connections with Epstein and Harvey Weinstein. I mean, those non-disclosure agreements. Women are hurt by a powerful man, and they take his money and are forced to sign an agreement that they will never speak about it. It's a loophole in American law that these things are allowed to exist because women are paid off and the problem, quote unquote, goes away while the predator continues preying. And it's just a horrifying, you know, I think the times have shifted. You know, the Me Too movement, which, you know, is in full flower. You know, we like to think we're making progress. On the other hand, you look at the Supreme Court hearing for Judge Kavanaugh, not making progress that quickly and not that much, but at least people are talking about it. People are fed up with it. Kelly, you know, the Mute R. Kelly movement started by Orenike and Kenyette out of Atlanta, you know, succeeded in making people realize that their money is going to a monster. And RCA has dropped him and he has no money. And, you know, his Spotify numbers are still really good. Every time he's in the news for a new accusation, more people stream his music. What does that say about society? It's pretty damn sad, I think. But money-wise, he's never, you know, he sold 100 million records, the money's gone, and he's sitting in jail.
Yeah, that's crazy. Tarana Burke, she's really incepted the Me Too movement. She's a former guest on the program.
Extraordinary woman.
Jim, do you think the Obamas knew what was going on and they kept mute?
I think everybody in Chicago knew, Ian. Especially at that level of Chicago does not have that many superstars, does not have that many rich, famous, powerful black people. And it was never a secret. You know, if you talk to 5 women on the south or west side of this city, 4 of them are going to have stories about seeing Kelly cruising the Evergreen Plaza shopping mall or the Rock and Roll McDonald's or Kenwood Academy High School. Their auntie, their cousin, their sister, somebody has had an experience with him, not necessarily sexual contact, but him hitting them up when they were clearly 14, 15, 16 years old. It has never been a secret, you know, and I feel guilty that when my first story ran December 2000, I felt like we were already 9 years late to that story. Because as you said, you know, Tiffany Hawkins, who, you know, never spoke to anyone, finally spoke to me for this book in January of this year. And now she's going to be in these next 5 hours of Surviving R. Kelly that airing in January. It's I kind of feel like it has finally come full circle. So the question, it's probably on your list somewhere. You know, Jim, after working so hard on this for so long, do you feel satisfaction? Do you feel vindicated? And, you know, I repeat what these women have told me.
Yeah.
It's all too little, too late.
Yeah, I mean, this Hawkins has got to be in her 40s now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's a mother of 2, a professional woman. She's one of the ones that got out okay, you know, went to college with the baby on her lap, got her master's degree, works in the medical field. Others are suffering significant damage. You know, a lot of these women are, just kind of an emotional mess. And especially after they had the courage to speak out and then found themselves not being believed, being dismissed, you know, gold diggers, liars, it's really difficult. I think that the Weinstein actresses have fared much better. I think that Epstein's victims have fared much better, but we still don't believe these black women.
Yeah. Jim, last week we hosted Jim Potash, John Potash, pardon me, and he's gone into, he's a Columbia University educator, he's gone into with a CIA involvement in drugs. We don't do music per se. We do corruption on any level on this program, but what he's found is the CIA involvement in manipulating people's lives. And he uses Jimi Hendrix as Kurt Cobain two examples. Do you think it's possible, Jim? Do you think R. Kelly, even though his appetite got the best of him, and it's just disgusts me to think that this guy was doing what he was doing for 3 decades, and the number of women he destroyed. Do you think there could be an angle to this where R. Kelly is possibly? Possibly a victim. Think about all the talented people in this country. Not to say that R. Kelly didn't hit the right stream at the right time, but was he somehow manipulated? Do you think?
I tell the story in Solace. He was a victim of child sexual abuse himself.
Uh-huh. Okay.
By an older woman in the family. It has since come out that it was an older sister. And by an older man in the neighborhood that they called uncle, but he wasn't really related. He scratched the surface of that in his autobiography, Solar Coaster, and a lot more detail has since come out. And I've interviewed, half a dozen of the leading child sexual abuse experts in America. And what they say is that most often the victims of child sexual abuse become advocates for other children. They become fighters to stop it from happening to other kids. But on rare occasions, the victim of sexual abuse becomes an abuser himself. And that's clearly what happened with Kelly. So the book is not without empathy. But when you think that the first victim was 1991, the first lawsuit was 96, the Aaliyah scandal was 96, our first story was 2000. The videotape surfaces in 2002. Miraculously, he's acquitted in 2008. He never stopped. Yep. He never stopped. I mean, how many wake-up calls to get help does one need? And the thing that crystallized it for me early on was one of his right-hand people who was a road manager said night after night after night, there can be 20 beautiful half-naked girls in the backstage room, and they all want to be with R. Kelly, and they're all 22, right? And night after night after night, there's that one girl in the corner, shy and acne-ridden and staring at her shoes, 14 or 15, and night after night, that's the girl he goes for.
Oh, boy. Oh, that's nasty.
It gave me the creeps when they put it that way, and I finally understood.
Yeah. So, now, Jim, is there a Bill Cosby connection?
No.
Monique Pressley?
What's that?
Monique Pressley?
Well, money, having the money, being able to get away with it. What's interesting, Cosby obviously was America's dad, right? He kind of transcended color. And we all felt like we knew Dr. Huxtable because he's in our living room, right, in the sweater. Kelly consciously, like many people in popular music, played the bad boy, and was, by his admission, the sexual super freak, by his favorite nickname, the Pied Piper of R&B.
Right, right.
So he's playing the bad, the super sexual freak. Unlike Cosby. And I think it's almost like in the Trump era, the bigger the sin, if you commit it in public and brag about it, people think, well, that can't possibly be true. But, again, 1996, age ain't nothing but a number. It's a confession right there.
Right.
Yeah. And he never hid this. People just weren't willing to believe his victims telling the story.
Yeah, it was manipulation in plain sight. And speaking to the Pied Piper, maybe you can talk about that because you've got opening your book for listeners, and when you start opening the pages to this this book, you've got a quote or a poem rather from the Pied Piper.
There's poem by Goethe about the Pied Piper. It's a fascinating story. In medieval Germany, the legend was that there was this rat catcher, and he rid this town that was infested with vermin of their rats, and the townsfolk decided to stiff him and not pay him, and he got revenge on them by luring their children to their deaths.
My goodness.
Oh. You know, and so Kelly has always denied that he didn't know that story, that he just used flute sounds. And there was a period there where he had a couple of remixes in a row that were heavy on the flute, you know, which is hard to believe. At some point, somebody would have said to him, you know, Robert.
Yeah, right.
An ill-advised nickname, given the accusations that you've gotten away with.
Right.
You know, I really think there's an element of Dostoevsky, Crime and Punishment here. I think he's wanted to be caught for a very long time.
Yeah. No. Oh, yeah. I mean, sure. It's like, right. Right. Wait. Where does this Pied Piper label come from? Is this something that he applied himself?
He claimed it. He claimed it.
Oh boy.
You know, in two or three of the different songs, he has a shout out. Hey, y'all, it's the Pied Piper of R&B. I mean, he sang it himself. You know, there was a very weird track released a year and a half ago, I admit, which is in the style of Trapped in the Closet, which will stand as the last piece of new music he really released, I admit. It's 19 minutes long. It's this weird operetta. And, you know, he admits he's done some things. But, you know, parents, if you're going to push your girls at me, you know, don't be blaming me. And, you know. It's really weird. I mean, it amounts to a confession and a protest that he doesn't think he's done anything wrong. And he also gives me a shout out, Jim DeRogatis or whatever your name is. Off the name, you've done made a career. Well, you know, as I said, I have a radio show on 195 public radio stations. I've written 11 books. I'm a professor at Columbia College, Chicago. You know, Robert, I've done a few other things besides this story, which, right. You know, has I never smoked before I started this story. I was married to someone else when I started this story. You know, boo-hoo, poor me. That's not what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I don't think you're a journalist, Ian. If a woman calls you and says, I've been hurt, no one is listening to me, I know you've done work on this, can I tell you my story? I don't think you're a journalist. I don't think you're a human being.
Yeah. Yeah.
If a woman who's been raped, who's been sexually assaulted, says, I need some help, I don't know how you walk away from that.
And Jim, will you be called to testify at some point? You've been called to testify in a previous case for R. Kelly. Will you be called to testify again?
I hope not.
No.
You know, Illinois, like many states in the U.S., has a shield law. When I was called to testify in 2008, the judge, a rotten, corrupt SOB, trampled on the First Amendment and the reporters' protections. You know, every single thing that I have confirmed with 10 sources and a dozen documents I have printed in Solus and in 19 years of reporting.
Yeah.
The only thing I have that, you know, I mean, you're going to call me to the stand. I'm going to refuse to testify because I will not name the names of women who spoke to me but have not gone on the record. Mm-hmm. And to be clear, there are dozens that have now gone on the record. But I will not name a source who said to me, I need to tell my story, but I can't put my name to it.
And Robert was arrested just after the release of this book. Is that correct?
Yeah, that was nice timing. He was arrested outside his luxury condo in Trump Tower, Chicago.
Uh-huh.
Can't make this stuff up, as he was walking his dog. And he hasn't been free since. You know, the federal government did it quietly. There was no press conference. There were just these two extraordinary charging documents, one from the Eastern District of New York, one from the federal offices in Chicago. And, you know, it was extraordinarily powerful to read these 42 charges and say, wow, okay, they have finally got him on everything I've reported for 19 years.
Yeah, and you've got to be a major reason why he's in jail.
No, again, it's those women who talk to me.
Okay. Yeah, good point.
Those women who talk to me. To be clear, it's a good story. It was a story, but it's a story I would gladly have gotten rid of a very long time ago. Yeah. You know, it's just that nobody cared about these women. I don't understand that. You know, my daughter is white. So am I. She's 22. I just never saw the difference between her and many of these girls who talk to me. Not Tia Hawkins in the beginning, not Joy Savage and Azriel Clary, these two women in their early 20s who are still supporting, you know, championing him now. It's not unusual. You said earlier about domestic abuse. If you talk to any cop on the beat, 9 times out of 10, they go to a domestic violence call, and the women can be battered and bleeding, and they'll say, oh, it was all just a big misunderstanding. I love him and he loves me.
Right.
And a lot of that, you know, there are still some women who say that about Kelly. You know, it's just tragic. It's almost a hypnotic power that he has.
Right. Yeah, there's something here. It's absolutely disgusting. Jim, tell us a little bit about Sound Opinions, WBEZ.
Yeah, well, soundopinions.org, for people who are not in Chicago. You know, we've been doing it for 10 years. Sound Opinions is a weekly, hour-long music talk show. You know, I mean, look, hey, people who love music, you and me, if we were getting a beer, we might be sitting on the couch in the basement playing records for each other that we're excited about and ranting and raving about something that we thought is a piece of crap. This is how people who love music react, you know, to it. Interact. You know, and Greg Kot is the rock critic at the Chicago Tribune. I was the pop music critic at the Chicago Sun-Times. It's two music geeks talking, and you're the third person on the couch at home.
Excellent. And Jim, what is next for you? You're going to continue, obviously, monitoring the R. Kelly situation. What is next for you outside of that and Sound Opinions?
I want to get back to writing a book about the power of music to save our lives. I think right now, you know, it's like mere entertainment. You know, we can Spotify anything in 2 seconds, and but I don't know. My life has been defined by music in a particular way, and I think that power still exists. Certainly, when I teach. You know, first-year students at Columbia College Chicago, it's 1 in 10, you know, and 90% of them may say, oh, it's just entertainment, you know, and for 1 in 10, it's a way to live your life.
Yeah. Some parting words for listeners, and I'm assuming the book can be found at Amazon.com?
Yeah, it's everywhere, and there's going to be 5 more hours of Surviving R. Kelly, The Reckoning, you know, on Lifetime, and starting January 2. I did some extensive interviews, and I've seen it, and it's really powerful.
Jim,
but the book is the whole story.
Excellent. Jim DeRogatis, ladies and gentlemen. Jim, thank you for joining Discuss Your Truth and Wynwood Radio. Happy holiday season to you, sir.
Yeah, thank you.
Jim DeRogatis, ladies and gentlemen. Jim's current book, Solace, The Case Against R. Kelly. Get it to Amazon.com. We appreciate Jim for joining the program. This is a happy holiday to you folks out there. Again, this is Ian Trottier. I come to you Wednesdays. Apart from today, this is a Thursday. And in fact, next week will also be the 1st of January. That'll be Wednesday next week, 1st of January. I come typically every Wednesday at 5 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time today and next week. I'll be bringing to you an incredible discussion next week on Thursday. Tobias Churchin will be joining the program, and he will be speaking about a very controversial figure in UK history, but yet many Americans are captivated by the work that this fellow did mystically. And he does coincide, I believe, at Cambridge. Was it Cambridge? Aleister Crowley studied at Cambridge, I'm pretty sure. Alongside, at the same time, maybe not alongside, but the same time as John Dee. And if you don't know, John Dee was one of, I believe it was Queen Victoria at the time, maybe corrected, one of her most secretive spies, or rather close-kept spies. And that is where one Ian Fleming came up with his 007 James Bond story. That is a close connection to the study he had done on John Dee. So, anyway, John Dee, closely connected to Aleister Crowley, and we'll be joined next week by Tobias Churchton. Tobias Churchton, we call him from the UK. Again, his recent book, Aleister Crowley in India, The Secret Influence of Eastern Mysticism on Magic and the Occult. For today, and Jim DeRogatis, his new book, Solus, The Case Against R. Kelly. You've listened to A Discussion of Truth with Ian Trottier. I am he. Follow me on Twitter. Follow me on Instagram. That's I-N-T-R-O-T-T-I-R, both handles. Contribute to the program, if you will. You can do that by making a donation at iantrottier.com. That's I-N-T-R-O-T-T-I-R.com. And getting ready in spring of 2020, you can order now. Pre-sale via Indigo Books in Canada or even on Amazon. Freedom Reserved. No More Lies. Trine Day Publisher. And until next week, be awesome.